Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Roderick Tremblay, a professor emeritus of economics and international finance at the University of Montreal. He served as president of the North Economics and Finance Association, president of the Canadian Economic Society, was a member of the Committee of Dispute Settlements of the North American Free Trade Agreement, and his books in English include The New American Empire and his latest, The Code for Global Ethics. Welcome to Background Briefing, Roderick Tremblay.
Good afternoon. Nice to talk to you in LA.
Good to talk to you as well, Roderick. We don't know what went on behind closed door, obviously, at the White House. When the three amigos yesterday did their press conference, it was pretty clear that they're all dealing with domestic politics back home. That's just the nature of it. The Mexican president really went out of his way to talk about how assault weapons are freely available in the United States, and they've been pouring in hundreds of thousands of responsible for the death of 50,000 Mexicans. And you know that the president didn't want to hear that because the Democrats are scared to death of even going in any way putting a toe in the water in terms of gun control, even though the Mexican president pointed out that since they overturned the assault weapons ban, this flood of weapons has happened. Prime Minister Harper, of course, is very and Obama have gone out of their way to say what a great personal friendship they have. But clearly, Harper is not happy about the president's cancellation of the Keystone XL.
Well, as you mentioned, the table, there's a lot of things on the table. It's a bit unfortunate that these three heads of state only took one day to, maybe less than one day, to discuss so many important issues for these three countries. You have to remember that Canada is the largest trade partner of the United States. Many Americans don't know that. It's not China. It's Canada, which is the most important trader with the United States, from oil, cars, computers, whatever you name them. And we are talking about $600 billion a year of trade between the two countries. If you include Mexico, then you reach $1 trillion of trade between these three countries. And that meeting in Washington between Mr. Calderon, Mr. Obama, and Mr. Harper took place before another meeting with the countries of Latin America, of the Americas. I think it's unfortunate that there's no more seriousness in this in approaching so many important issues. You mentioned the assault weapons ban that was raised in 2004. This is destroying Mexico. Mexico is turning into a lawless state. That's terrible. And I think it comes from the fact that many American politicians don't want to look at the consequences of their decisions outside of their border. But, you know, outside of the border, Mexico is within the United States. You know, in LA, how many Mexicans originating from Mexico live in that area. And the same with Canada. And another thing that could have been raised, you know, that the United States now has begun flying unmanned planes on the Canadian border. In the Dakota and Manitoba area, these drones, it's a bit insulting that two neighbors like Canada are building electronic fences and things like that. I think we should be like in Europe. When you go from France to Germany, there's no border. I don't think we should have borders for trade. I understand for immigration, there's a big problem of immigration in the United States and also Canada. We have a lot of immigration. But for trade, I mean, we should drop the red tape, drop the hassle, and make it more smoother for the benefit of all Canadians and all Americans.
Well, but, you know, unfortunately, these things become domestic political issues. The NRA is a powerful lobby. The right-wing Tea Party of the Republican Party is running on the anti-immigrant, yes, you know, ticket, if you will. And the Keystone Pipeline has become a political issue here in the United States in terms of domestic politics. The Republicans candidates are using it as a wedge to bash Obama. He's got to worry about his environmental constituency on the left. He's got to worry about his left in general because they're very disappointed in him. What do you think the deal is between him and Harper on Keystone?
Well, that pipeline, as you know, it's a big project that's been in the cards for at least 7 years. It's more than 2,000 miles long. It has been an issue in Canada for in two senses. First, many Canadians have said that pipeline will bring Canadian crude oil to American refineries in Illinois and in Texas, but it doesn't feed with Canadian refineries. So many Canadians see that as a project mainly to cater to the American needs. Another thing also is the fact that Canada may be too tied with the United States in regarding its oil exports. And that's why some people are proposing in Canada that there are more links with China and Asia in order to export Canadian oil, because Canada is one of the largest supplier of oil, at least if you consider the sands.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an issue on both sides of the border. On the U.S. side, there's a question of security of supply of oil. Of course, Canada is the most secure supplier of oil that you could find in the world outside of the United States. And President Obama, of course, has postponed the project until 2013, in other words, after the November election. So that pipeline will go on, and the government of Nebraska has proposed changes to the routes of that pipeline. It's a question of postponing. Of course, that brings cost to the promoters of that the project, but I have no doubt that pipeline will be built.
But Rodrigue Tremblay, again, Professor Emeritus of Economics and International Finance at the University of Montreal, and he served as a member of the Committee of Dispute Settlements of the North American Free Trade Agreement, and is the author of The New American Empire and The Code for Global Ethics. But in Canada itself, I believe the environmentalists are very concerned about the environmental cost of extracting these tar oil from the tar sands, because it requires an enormous amount of water, enormous amount of energy to heat the water, and these high pressure steam hoses to separate the oil from the sand, and then the oil that presumably will go to America, but what's left in Canada is this brackish, oil-soaked water that's stored in these vast lakes that keep growing and growing and growing and growing. And some Canadian environmentalists I've talked to said at some point the value of the water might be greater than the value of the oil.
You're right. That's a third issue. And in northern Alberta, because tar sands are mainly in the north of Edmonton, Calgary is sort of the capital of Alberta, financial capital, and that's true. That uses a lot of resources, a lot of water, and in the future, maybe agriculture will be lacking supplies of water. Although Canada is probably the country in the world which has the most soft water supply. And, of course, in the West, they have less water than we have in the East. I'm from Montreal myself, and Quebec has 1 million lakes of water. But that's an issue. The problem is that the world needs energy, and as long as other energy supplies are not coming fast enough, it's very difficult to push oil completely out of the picture. So the government of Alberta is looking very closely. There's an election this year, as a matter of fact, in Alberta, and this is an issue that the voters of Alberta will have to decide.
And what about the idea of sending a pipeline across to the Pacific coast near Vancouver, or north of Vancouver, I believe, is the proposed route from the tar sands to supply China? I understand that the First Nations, native Canadians, are not too happy about this.
Yes, the Harper government has pushed for that alternative route. But you have first of all, you have to cross the Canadian Rockies. If you have crossed the U.S. Rockies, you know it's 30 miles wide. And you mentioned the Indian lands in B.C. But here again, so it's a question of route. They could have a different route and try to find a solution. Of course, these projects are always complex because so many agencies, so many governments are involved. But with goodwill, you can minimize the costs and maximize the benefits for everybody. I'm somewhat optimistic in that.
Well, just in closing, let me ask you a broad political question about this country's politics, particularly on the Republican side, are moving so far to the right. It's amazing. And there's, you know, Barack Obama said today that Ronald Reagan wouldn't have a chance in a Republican primary today. You've got a right wing prime minister. But I take it a right-wing Canadian is way to the left of a right-wing American.
Well, you're pretty right. I follow American politics very closely because I have a blog that is devoted to American economic issues and American political issue, and it's called the Code for the Big Picture World. The Big Picture World. That's my code. My
address, right?
Well, you're right. I don't think Thomas Jefferson or John F. Kennedy could be elected nowadays in the United States, the way the climate is. And I think when President Reagan canceled the fair doctrine of obtaining a license for radio and TV.
The fairness doctrine, yeah.
Yeah, the fairness doctrine. Kept a balance. Now you have a lot of opinions, a lot of propaganda, and the public, of course, is badly served by that polarizing. And you see that in Washington, there's no climate, no desire for compromise. Well, in a democracy, if you don't compromise, you are at war.
Sure. Well, Rodrigue Tremblay, I thank you. We've run out of time, but I thank you so much for joining us.
Very interesting talk to you.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Again, I'm speaking with Rodrigue Tremblay, Professor Emeritus of Economics and International Finance at the University of Montreal. He served as President of the North Economics and Finance Association, President of the Canadian Economic Society, was a member of the Committee of Dispute Settlements of the North American Free Trade Agreement. His books in English include The New American Empire and his latest, The Code for Global Ethics. So what do we learn on Background Briefing today? Well, we began with the Politico's Ken Vogel. He's their chief investigative reporter, looking into this shadowy group called the Weaver Terrorist Group, which is led by Karl Rove. That's his address in Washington. These are where all the GOP money bundlers and kingmakers get together. They helped the Republicans retake the House in 2010, and they got some really big plans for 2012. He went through all the kind of players involved and the enormous amounts of money they're bringing to the table, and also explained some of the rifts between them. They're not all, curiously enough, Karl Rove is considered to be an establishment Republican, and the Koch brothers and some of the more radical Tea Party types don't trust him. So there's some question as to whether they'll unite around Mitt Romney. But the kind of money, the kind of secrecy that's provided by Citizens United really makes this whole situation appalling. And I frankly think that they're going to buy this next election. And then I spoke with Paul Starr, a Pulitzer Prize-winning sociologist at Princeton. He turns out to have a lot of. He was a senior advisor to Clinton's healthcare plan, if you will, and he also wrote this article in the New Republic. The healthcare mandate really was a mistake. We talked about that, and he made it pretty clear that the president miscalculated about the courts, the politics, and the policy itself. All of these things could have been fixed. His new book, Remedy and Reaction, The Peculiar American Struggle Over Healthcare Reform, is definitely worth a read because it really does explain all of this complicated stuff. And, of course, the worst people to explaining the healthcare has been the Obama administration itself. Then finally, I spoke with a Canadian specialist, an economist, about what Harper and Obama were talking about at the White House yesterday and the future of the Keystone XL pipeline. he basically feels that this country has gone so far to the right, it's appalling, and that even a conservative in Canada would be a liberal Democrat here in the United States. An interesting conversation. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbons. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.